Hi everyone, welcome to the news show. It's January 17th, 2019. It's just me here today. My name is Brielle. I'll be your host for today. Usually I'm here with either Aaron or Garrison, but both of them are pretty busy with student elections, which are happening. So it's just gonna be me. It's gonna be a stream of consciousness for about an hour. We might make it up a little bit shorter depending on how many opinions I have, but we still have quite a lot of news stories to talk about today. So on our agenda, the first two articles actually are about student union elections. The first one is going to be about female representation. So the future is female. We have quite a lot of representation from the female side. The second article is going to be about Brantford representation. So our second campus over on Brantford. Our third news article is going to be talking about the new winter carnival that happened. Then we have the Waterloo Region Museum, which recently unveiled its new space exhibit. Finally, we have First Nations strikes in Waterloo, and that's it for all of the news that we would be talking about today. We have two articles from Arts and Life. The first one is More Bang for Your Buck, where to find used reads in the KW region. So we're going to take a look at some of the used bookstores around the region. Then we have the Kitchener-Waterloo production of Carmen, which has brought together a lot of music students from both Laurier University and the surrounding area. And finally, we have Reigniting the Greatest Rivalry in Laurier History in our sports story for today. So we're going to give you a rundown about the Battle of Waterloo. Okay, let's just get started with the first news article. The first one is about student union elections. The future is female. So for the 2018 to 2019 school year, the Wilfrid Laurier University Students Union had only one female on their board of directors, and the year before they had four. So this year we've had a little bit less female representation than we've had previously, but even before four is not a lot. This year, however, we're starting the new union elections, and we have quite a few female candidates. So out of the four presidential candidates, one of them is female. Her name is Claudia Wojtanowski. She's a BBA student with previous experience as a director on the board. She's currently an undergraduate representative on the Board of Governors. So she's had a little bit of experience with the union. She's also the first female presidential candidate Laurier has had since 2015. So it's been many years since we've had a female presidential candidate. There are also five female candidates that are running for the board of directors. So their names are Devin Kelly, Julia Pereira, Karneet Chahal, Saloni Sharma, and Stephanie Higgs. Saloni Sharma and Karneet Chahal are also running for positions on the Senate. So in total, that makes six female candidates. Last year, only 1/10 of the board was female, while this year, 1/3 of the candidates are female. So that's quite an improvement. Of course, we've yet to see how many of them are actually going to be elected into the union. But even 1/3 of candidates is not very representative of Laurier student population. Laurier student population is actually 54% female. So for it to be representative, we would need a lot more candidates to be running. So like I mentioned before, the five female candidates are an increase from last year, but in the last 5 years, no more than five female candidates have ever run for board of directors positions, and the elected number is obviously lower than five because not all the female candidates were successful in their run. And that brings up a question that I kind of want to pose to you guys. You guys can write in, let us know what you think. Do you think we need mandatory requirements for gender? It's a question I think that comes up pretty much every election season, and it's more about how can we get the candidate population to equal like the representativeness of the student population. Like I said, 54% female. Is it even possible? Are there that many females who currently want to run and are maybe just too intimidated to run? Or what's happening there? Do we need a slow increase to get that percentage to 54? Are we on track to getting there? We certainly think that the improvement has been shown from this year to the candidates for next year, but whether that growth it's sustainable, we'll have to see. Okay, so that was our first news article. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the other type of representation on the student union side. That's the Brantford representation. Quick break for now. Hello, I'm back. Hopefully you guys enjoyed your little musical interlude. We're back to talk about the news article that's on number two this week. It's Students' Unions Election Season Brantford Representation. So with five candidates that are female, we actually only have one Brantford candidate that's running for position of president and two for the board of directors. So three Brantford candidates in total. Representation from Brantford campus this year is going to be lower in comparison to last year. Last year there were five candidates in total. So the sole Brantford candidate I just mentioned is called Talha Naeem. He and his campaign team have been very active. He says they've spoken to every single group of students on the Brantford campus, which is a big claim. That means they've spoken to every single student on the Brantford campus, and they said that they've had a conversation with them about why this representation is so important. So Talha argues that as Brantford changes from a small size to mid-size campus, with the acquisition of additional educational and administrative programs, then its representation in Laurier University as a whole must also increase. Now, some of you guys might know I'm not a Laurier student, so I actually didn't know about the Brantford campus until this year. It seems like it's a satellite campus. It's been growing in size recently, so I'm glad that there are more representation in the students' union election. Even though it's a decrease from last year, they're still being represented, which is great. And if Talha really ends up being president, then that would mean big changes for the Brantford campus, a lot more representation there. So good luck to them all. I think changing mindsets about voting is pretty hard, just putting myself in the shoes of those Brantford students, because some of them might feel like their vote won't make that much of a difference. But if what Talha says is true, and all of Brantford comes out and votes, then this could really turn the tide for them, and a lot of changes could be made for the Brantford campus. Because as much as all these students sitting here at the Waterloo campus want to help make a difference for all students, obviously what's going to be on the forefront of their minds is issues that are facing the Waterloo campus students, because that's what they see and that's what they hear all the time. It's very hard to put yourself in the shoes of people you don't see all the time, so maybe the Brantford campus does want a turret or does want some extra programming. It's not as effective if they just send in some emails or make some calls. It's much more effective to have one of their own represented here in the Students' Union. So again, good luck to them all. Hopefully one of the three Brantford candidates actually does end up winning their respective elections and we can see some representation. Okay, moving on to the next article, we're going to be talking about New Year, New Winter Carnival. So this was on Sunday, January 13th, 2019. The Wilfrid Laurier University Students' Union annual Winter Carnival event kicked off. This signaled the start of a week's worth of activities for participants in the event. So right now we're on Thursday. We still have, we had today and we have tomorrow to finish off the Winter Carnival week. So the Winter Carnival is an annual event where teams that range from 20 to 40 participants, they get together to compete in various events like dance-off, sled building, and dodgeball tournaments, among other team building events. There's 14 teams competing this year, all to get to the winning spot. And there's actually three different types of cups. So you have an activities cup, a spirit cup, and an overall cup. So the 14 teams will be competing to get one or more of those cups. Students in any year can participate in the Winter Carnival, and students who may not have a group of 20 friends, that's a lot of friends to have, let's be real. I don't think a lot of us can say we have 20 close friends, but if you don't have 20 close friends who want to sign up for an event, you can sign up as a free agent and be placed on a team to compete with other people, and then you'll get to know 19 more, or however many more people who will be on your team. So that should be a lot of fun. That's actually the goal of this event. You want to go out there, meet some new people, make some new friends. Posters and promotional materials for Winter Carnival are placed around campus, and if you're on the teams, you can find these posters to earn points toward the Winter Carnival week. Now, Winter Carnival has existed for decades at Laurier because it's not only a way to meet new people and win, but it also shows off Laurier spirit, a lot like Hawk Weekend does, but this is going to be for all students rather than just first-year students like Hawk Weekend is. So if you haven't signed up for this year, then definitely check out Winter Carnival for next year. They just finished an event called The Amazing Race, which is a scavenger hunt around campus. They also plan to have a captain's dance-off, and there's also a mystery event night, which is really exciting. So what the mystery event night is there are buses that are pre-ordered, and the students' unions send the teams on these buses. The key is you don't know where the buses are going, so they'll just drop you off in an event space and you will be assigned to do some sort of activity. The mystery night isn't only open to the Winter Carnival participants. So even if you didn't sign up for the Winter Carnival, you can still take a place in the mystery event night. You just have to buy a ticket for $10. You can buy it on the student union's website. So if you're interested in spending your night who knows where, you should check out the Winter Carnival. If I was a Laurier student, I definitely would be signing up for that pronto. All right, let's move on to our next news article. We're going to be talking about the Waterloo Region Museum, which has unveiled a new space exhibit. So this opening is actually going to be happening on February 1st. We're a little ahead of the game, giving you guys some news that's going to be coming up. So if you guys want to check out the Waterloo Region Museum, it's opening on February 1st. And it's opening from February 1st all the way to April 28th. The exhibit is called Journey to Space. It's going to be really big, and it's going to be an interactive exhibit that's designed to encourage hands-on cosmic learning for all ages. Just a little warning, there's going to be a lot of puns and space-themed events that I'm going to be talking about in relation to the Waterloo Region Museum. So just buckle up. The exhibit is going to fill the 500 square foot gallery with several different sections. So I think there are seven sections. So the first is talking about the dangers of space exploration. The second section is talking about traveling to and in space. This is going to be a pretty informative guide. It's going to be talking about space traveling vessels and rockets, as well as how to protect yourself in space. There's going to be an interview video there with an engineer explaining ION engines. I have no idea what ION engines are, so I'm just going to search that up really quick. What are ION engines? Oh, it's an ion thruster engine. Very interesting. See, I need to go to the exhibit to find out more. Okay, the third section is about weightlessness, so how you feel in space. And the fourth section is about living in space. And it's going to talk about the International Space Station in this fourth exhibit, which is really important to Canadians because in December, Canadian Space Agency astronaut David Saint-Jacques began his voyage into space on his first mission, and he is the first Canadian to return to the ISS since 2013. So we should bring a little bit of our Canadian pride there when we're looking at section number four. Section five is about working in space, and section six is about movement in space. So I think section six would probably be my favorite, I can tell already, because how they've advertised it is they say that you're going to feel like you're in a spaceship. And finally, we have section seven, the last section. It's about the future of human exploration in space and what we may hope to see forthcoming. Now, obviously the exhibit hasn't opened yet, so we have no idea what it's going to look like besides just like these little tidbits about each section, but I'm imagining it's probably going to be one of those walkthrough exhibits that you go through each section one by one and you kind of get the whole story. So when we get to that last section, it's kind of that, how do you say it? That like inspirational moment where it's talking about the future and how we can improve the future. And if there's any kids in the exhibits, I'm sure they're going to come out of it saying, "Mom, Dad, I want to be an astronaut." Okay, so that's the sections. The exhibit was designed to create an authentic learning experience for patrons. A lot of the sections are going to include audio, visual, and mechanical simulations for all those who wish to attempt a space adventure, which sounds super fun, hands-on learning. It's opening officially to the public on February 1st, but if you are a member or if you are an invited guest, there's going to be a launch for the entire exhibit on January 31st. So if you're lucky or you are a paid member, then you can attend the launch. There are no additional admission costs from February 1st onwards, so you just need to pay general admission to gain access to the exhibit. General admission for the Waterloo Region Museum, for those who don't know, is $11 for adults, $8 for students, which is us, so only $8 to get in, $8 for seniors as well, and if you are a child listening to this, well, you get to pay $5 to get into the museum. In collaboration with the exhibit, there are also some special events taking place. So on Family Day weekend, February 16th, there's going to be this breakfast with the Empire. See, I told you there's going to be a lot of puns and space themes. Breakfast with the Empire is going to be happening on February 16th. It's a space-themed breakfast, which is going to include family-friendly interactive learning activities. There's also a Guardians of the Galaxy After Hours party, which includes beer samples, food, and entertainment. This one is not so kid-friendly, it's a 19-plus event, and everyone can come dressed to this party in their intergalactic costumes. So that should be really fun. Guardians of the Galaxy After Hours party. There's going to be a lot more events, a lot more details coming up, so if you want to learn more about this awesome exhibit, you can visit the Waterloo Region Museum website. I'll be honest, before I read this article, I did not ever visit the Waterloo Region Museum, and I have never heard of this exhibit taking place, but it sounds so fun. I definitely booked it in my calendar. I definitely want to go, and I want to look at all of the different sections that are happening. If I was most excited about one thing in this museum, I think, well, I said already that I would be excited about the moving in space, but I think I would also be excited about section number 3, which is weightlessness. I want to see what it feels like. I've heard that when you enter those machines where it's supposed to mimic you in space and twirl you around so that you feel like there's no gravity, that a lot of people get really sick and they throw up, so I'm a little scared that that's going to happen. But maybe if I just go without eating anything beforehand, it'll be fine. We'll see. I'm definitely going to that one. So I'll let you guys know next time I'm hosting how that experience was. Okay, we're going to move on to the next article now. I think you guys have heard enough about me just like talking about space. We're going to be talking about the First Nation strikes in Waterloo. So this happened on January 8th. We're jumping a little bit back to the past. On January 8th, a group of nearly 200 local activists, they joined together in Uptown Waterloo Square just to demonstrate their solidarity with the First Nations. So the Solidarity Protest, one among many that was held across the country, it was in response to the recent conflicts in British Columbia between the people and the Coastal GasLink. So the Coastal GasLink company was in the process of building a 700-kilometer natural gas pipeline that's going to run through their territory. After months of protest and dispute regarding the building of this pipeline on ancestral lands, members had set up a road blockade to prevent Coastal GasLink workers from proceeding. And last week, in response, the RCMP actually arrived to forcefully remove this blockade and arrest the protesters because Coastal GasLink had received had put in process a court injunction. So the RCMP came to exercise that. In response, there were a ton of solidarity protests that were seen all across Canada last week, most notably in Vancouver. So in Vancouver, hundreds of people were marching through the downtown streets to encourage support, awareness, and action. And of course, Kitchener-Waterloo also did their part. So those who congregated on Tuesday in Kitchener-Waterloo, they came with banners, signs, and drums to show their support for not only this instance, but also all Indigenous land disputes taking place across the continent. Some of the signs and banners that were brought to the protest, they read statements such as respect our water and honor the treaties. There was also a drumming circle, which encouraged participation by protesters to dance to the music. Actually, there were a lot of young children that were seen dancing to the drummers. And the traffic blockade in Waterloo by protesters actually caused Grand River Transit to halt, and eventually the drivers had to wait in the square because it couldn't pass. After about 15 minutes, the police showed up and they encouraged the cars not to wait and move away. So they didn't actually do anything with the demonstrators. They were just like moving all the traffic along, lots of rubberneckers and also people staying there trying to figure out what was going on. So because the police were so non-violent and non-confrontational about this, they were actually thanked by the protesters for being respectful about the solidarity demonstration. I'm really glad this demonstration happened. They really do spread the message. The Cord definitely wouldn't have covered this story had it not been for the solidarity march in KW. And we really need to realize that a lot of these indigenous land disputes and breaches are happening on a very regular basis, but it's not really talked about at all because, again, the representation just isn't there in the media and in places where people have a voice in order to spread the message. So it's only when demonstrations like this end up like obstructing traffic, causing some sort of inconvenience to those with privilege, that we see these demonstrations being actually brought into the news. Like, how many years ago was that? I feel like it's been several years now since when Shailene Woodley was arrested for protesting. This was the only time when we actually saw these demonstrations being showcased in the news, because again, it was a white woman who was being arrested and protesting and telling us that this was wrong, and then finally the world paid attention. So these demonstrations, we need to realize that it's happening a lot more often than we think, and it's not just these stories that are making it to the news that are actually occurring. They're occurring every day, everywhere. Okay, let's move on to the next article. We're talking about arts and life. So this is a little bit more of a lighthearted piece published in our arts and life section. It was called More Bang for Your Book, Where to Find Used Reads in KW. So there, the Cord's writer actually wrote about three physical stores that specialize in used books in KW. So they excluded the Laurier bookstore from this, even though it's technically a used bookstore. I think just it's too university focused, so they decided to branch out and talk about three other used bookstores. So Laurier bookstore is not in here, but if you want to buy some books there, please go ahead. So the first bookstore they talked about was the KW bookstore. This one, he said, had the smallest selection, but had a strangely large inventory of German books, which is very interesting. The smell was apparently also the most prominent at the KW bookstore, and the KW bookstore had a website, but the writer couldn't get it to open on their browser. Now, since I'm alone today and there's no one to kind of keep me on track, I just want to see if I can try to access the KW bookstore on my laptop, see if it actually takes forever to load. Because this was the reason why the KW bookstore didn't win the contest that was written here. Okay, so I just searched up KW bookstore. I don't even see a website on here. Nope, do not see a website for the KW bookstore. They do have a Twitter page, which loads quite fast, and its last tweet was in September 2018. And they have an Instagram page where they post a lot of pictures of books. So couldn't even find a website for me. Not sure which website they were looking at, but apparently it loaded very slowly for the writer. And another pro of the KW bookstore was that it had good music selection. The second bookstore that they talked about was called Old Goat Books. This was actually, I'll leave the winner to the end. So the old book Gold, Old Goat Books was the second physical store. How the writer described it was that they said there were shelves shooting at least 8 feet from the ground, narrow walkways that made you feel as though you are surrounded by knowledge and entertainment. They also have a ton of friendly staff, and they had an intuitive website. Now, since I already searched up the website with KW Bookstore, I feel like I gotta continue the trend. I'm gonna search up Old Goat Books and see if I see anything. Ah, they do have a website here, and it looks like a book website. I used to do book reviews as a side gig, and this looks surprisingly like the online book review website I used to work for. Interesting. Okay, Old Goat Books, that's the second one. The third one is A Second Look Books and Movies. So, looks like they sell both used books and movies. This one was described as very cozy, had the largest selection of the three bookstores, but their separation of stock was a little bit confusing. So they said that some books fitted in multiple categories and you didn't really know which section to look for it in, but there was a ton of knowledgeable staff members around who could help you. Honestly though, I think bookstores are the one place where I don't look for staff. Like when I'm shopping for clothes or like various merchandise, like maybe like kitchen tools and stuff, I go in the store and I specifically look for a salesperson. I ask, because I don't want to waste a lot of time in the store, so I always ask, this is exactly what I'm looking for, please recommend me something, because the workers have obviously spent a ton of time around the merchandise. They know like the special characteristics of each, they know how to recommend it to us, and oftentimes they're also like the stores also track like how many customers and how many sales they bring in, so I like to help them along a little bit with that. The bookstores though, I go into bookstores because I want to browse and because I want to find out which books call to me, so usually I like to be a little bit more on the quiet side when I'm visiting bookstores. Don't talk to the staff as much, unless it's just to talk to them about series I've read or like good books, though that's always a fun conversation. But I don't know if I would want to go to A Second Look Books and Movies if I can't find everything myself. I think bookstores, you want to be able to find things without talking to the staff, and that's also why this bookstore maybe wasn't the winner. There is also apparently a dog at the store sometimes, which adds bonus points, kind of counteracts the fact that you can't find your book sometimes. Maybe also because the bookstore is so big. That could be another reason. But there's sometimes a dog at the store, so if you want to drop by and there's a doggy, I think that would brighten your mood for the day. Out of the three bookstores, our writer chose Old Goat Books as the winner, mostly because of the website. That reminds me, I did not check to see if A Second Look Books and Movies had a website. I'm going to go over there and check right now. See how much I would rate this based on their website. Oh, they do have a website. Books and Movies, Used Books, Kitchener. I kind of like this website more than the Old Goat Books. You guys should search up the websites and let me know what you guys think. I like the third website a little bit more. And maybe I want to check out this bookstore for myself. I want to see if maybe it's just the writer who couldn't find the books they wanted, and maybe it's actually a little bit more intuitive than you think. Spending a little extra time on this story because I love books, might already be able to tell, and I've been actually wondering recently about the waste that books create. We always talk about like the waste that our clothes and these things that we buy, which are a little bit more on the bad side, and all the waste that this creates. Like, I've been learning a lot about fast fashion recently. Just tried to stop shopping at those fast fashion stores like Forever 21, Zara, which have like a lot of like $5 t-shirts but kind of break apart after a few washes, and you really learn that those shirts are often made under pretty unethical practices, and they ultimately just end up piling either in our closets or in landfills, or wherever we end up discarding these clothes, because inevitably next season they're not in anymore, you never see people wearing them on the streets anymore, so you just don't bring them out of your closet, and eventually they get dumped somewhere, creating a ton of waste. So I think nowadays more people are becoming aware of this, becoming aware of fast fashion, trying to get out of fast fashion. But books, I'm wondering if there's a similar kind of life cycle. Like, obviously the life cycle is different in that there's no fast fashion books. Like, there's no books that they create for super cheap and then people discard them. Actually, now I'm thinking about it, there might be. Like, I'm thinking about, like, James Patterson novels, some of those, like, romance books that are super cheap to buy, but you never really want to reread them because there's just not that much substance there. But, yeah, talking about books, I'm guilty of never rereading books. Like, there's so many books in the world, I'm not going to spend my time rereading another one. I think I've only reread, maybe I've reread, like, some of the Harry Potter series. I'm a big fan of Ayn Rand, so I've reread some of her books, but otherwise I never reread books. So I'm always debating whether I should pick up a new copy of a book or actually just go to the library and pick one up from there, because I feel like I'm being less wasteful by rereading it once if I'm not actually purchasing the book and, like, forcing someone to waste all that paper and waste all that ink and print it. But sometimes you just want to write on your books, you know, or you want to, like, dog-ear the pages, make it your own, and you don't really want to do that with library books, that ruins them. So I was struggling with that recently, but used books seems like a perfect solution. You can annotate the books, make it your own, keep it if you really like it, and you haven't kind of contributed to all that waste in the world. I don't know if there's an argument for buying new books. I'm sure there is, because you're kind of supporting the authors who created them. But again, the authors can be supported in other ways. You can support them by reading the books, encouraging libraries to buy them. You don't necessarily need to buy them yourself. There's a really huge conversation that exists for the used book market as well as the new book market, even the Kindle and ebook market. I can talk about this forever, and I'm not sure a lot of you guys would be interested in this, but let me know. Email us if you are, and I can definitely do a big rant about books next time I have the opportunity. Maybe next time I'm on one of these things by myself. But we'll move on for now. We're going to move on to another article in our Arts and Life section. It's talking about the production of Carmen that's brought together music students. So last weekend, Wilfrid Laurier University's Faculty of Music, in collaboration with the Kitchener-Waterloo Symphony, they brought together over 150 music students performing Georges Bizet's Carmen. So there were two concert version performances, meaning it presented with little to no staging, sets, or costumes. The first was on Friday, January 11th, and the second was on Saturday, January 12th. Among the singers, there were three recent graduates and one current student of the music program at Wilfrid Laurier. The choir had four different Laurier choirs. So we had the Laurier Concert Choir, the Maureen Forrester Singers, the Laurier Singers, and the Laurier Opera Chorus. The performances sold out on both nights, which is not unusual for the faculty. Laurier music is pretty well known. It was so well known that even though I'm not a Laurier student and have pretty much no interest in music, I've heard about it. And so even though I didn't go to this production of Carmen, I'm sure it was great. And just thinking about, like, as I was preparing this outline, I was looking at, like, all of the different choirs that were composed, that were brought together for this production, and also all of the singers. Just the sheer amount of coordination that had to have gone into this sounds absolutely incredible. So I'm sure the nights were amazing. The sold out tickets show that it was absolutely amazing. And maybe next year, if you guys are interested, you guys can go to listen to Laurier's music students perform another production. Probably won't be Carmen, might be another symphony. Okay, our last article of the day, of the week, is sports. And you guys already know that I know very little about sports, but I'm gonna try my best. We're gonna get through this. I think I understand because for this article, it's not really about any of the technicalities of any particular sport, and it's really more about the history of sports in the Waterloo region, and I like history, so let's give this a go. Our article is called Reigniting the Greatest Rivalry in Laurier History. Can you guess what it is? Greatest rivalry in Laurier history? I'm sure it's debatable, but according to this article, that's what the greatest rivalry is. So Wilfrid Laurier University's varsity football games against the Western Mustangs, they usually create the highest amount of excitement for the Golden Hawk fans. Is this the greatest rivalry in Laurier history? Actually, it's not. The Golden Hawks' rivalry with the University of Waterloo has the potential to overtake Laurier's rivalry with Western in the future. So this is the rivalry we're going to be concentrating on. The Battle of Waterloo. This is what it's marketed as, the games between these two neighboring schools. The Battle of Waterloo is a full-fledged competition between the Hawks and the University of Waterloo Warriors. The schools have actually kept track of the result of every Battle of Waterloo game throughout the year, and whoever has the better record at the end is presented with a trophy, and probably most important, especially in the world of sports, they get presented with bragging rights for saying, we're the school that won the Battle of Waterloo this year. So the series actually started with Rolly Webster. He's a Laurier alum who is now the Director of Athletics and Recreation at the University of Waterloo. His goal is to expand the battle beyond football to all varsity sports. Even in Canada, our college football environment is not as crazy as the States, but football still seems to be the game that engenders the most school spirit. So Rolly really wants people to move past that. Look at all the varsity sports. The competition officially began at the start of the 2017 to 2018 school year, and it was Laurier who came out on top last year, in the end with 11 wins, 4 losses, and 4 draws overall. If I'm going to interpret these numbers, really it wasn't that close. They had 11 wins and only 4 losses. Man, Laurier killed it last year. Again, the Golden Hawks are currently leading the Battle of Waterloo. They have 7 wins, 5 losses, and 1 draw. So it seems to be a little bit closer this year. Over social media, there's been a tremendous amount of marketing done on the rivalry by both schools. Now we're going to head in a little bit into the history of this Battle of Waterloo. Because even though this official battle only started last year, it's been a long time coming. So in the 1990s, the Warriors, hard to believe it now, but they actually used to have a footballing edge over the Hawks. They got 2 Yates Cups, and back then Laurier only got 1. But in the 2000s, the Hawks started to become a little bit better. They captured 2 more football OUA championships, while the Warriors failed to even reach the finals since 1999. I'm currently doing my master's program now, so I'm in year 5, but when I came in as a freshman in Waterloo, I remember I went to the first football game, and I was so excited because it was, like, my first year at university, and I knew, like, well, I thought that, like, everyone went to the football games to kind of cheer the schools on and to show school spirit. So I had, like, all my bandanas, and then I had my face painted, so ready to cheer, and we were playing Western, and we got annihilated at that game. So since then, I always just assumed, oh man, Waterloo's not good at football. Football is not our game. Maybe we'd be a little bit better at the other sports, but that game was just imprinted in my mind. So it was good to hear that, while doing research for this, that the Warriors actually did have an edge back in the 1990s. But we're making a comeback, as I'm gonna talk about. So 4 years ago, the Warriors hired head coach Chris Bertoa, and the team has shown major signs of improvement. So 4 years ago is 1 year after that dramatic loss with Western. They've shown major signs of improvement, and the reason is probably because of the head coach. So Chris Bertoa played for Waterloo during their Yates Cup wins in 1990s, and he has had a successful coaching career since then. He was named the 2017 OUA Coach of the Year, and in 2018, after some coaching from Bertoa, the Warriors finally beat the Hawks. I know most people listening to this are probably Laurier students, so I'm not going to cheer right now, but I feel the cheer on the inside. So we can see that the Battle of Waterloo is kind of heating up a little bit. Laurier is actually seeing Waterloo as some competition now, and we have the possibility of winning this battle. So, fierce competition up ahead. I really like the Battle of Waterloo. It's a catchy name, and it looks like it's a friendly competition. It's definitely being marketed as such. I'm going to be following this matchup, even though I don't usually follow sports, just because of the excellent marketing that's being done here. Okay, and that takes us to the end of the show. Thank you for all of those who tuned in to listen. Hopefully, you didn't feel too bored that it was just me speaking your ear off today instead of like two of us. Hopefully I've entertained you enough with some anecdotes and stories and stuff. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, if you like us, if you hate us, if you have anything at all you'd like to say, or if you even just want to get involved in the news team, we'd love to have you have someone besides just me talking at the microphone. You can find us on Twitter or Facebook. Just message us. We'll do our best to respond. Thank you to the staff and volunteers at Radio Laurie and Wolusip for helping to make this program possible. Our music was provided by Steve Dave for Life. Have a wonderful weekend, Laurier. We'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.